Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
I love it. I love this song.
Yeah, I love it too. I don't think we ever do it in the same key.
No, unfortunately, because we're neither of us are musicians.
No.
And we stink at it.
Yeah, but ironically, both of us love music so much.
It's not fair. I wish I could sing.
Wish you could sing.
Yeah. If I could fulfill a fantasy, I would want to be a rock and roll star.
I know.
Well, you know, not today. Back in the day when, you know, there was real rock and roll, you're playing guitar and, you know, there were groupies and you didn't have to worry about deadly diseases and stuff.
Yeah.
It would have been great.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it would have been about the music.
Yes.
I seem to have gone in another direction.
Yeah,
It's all about the music, man.
Yeah,
it's all about the music.
Yeah, light the candles.
Yeah. Light the candles. They're not holding up candles in the concert.
Don't they do that anymore?
It's lighters.
Oh, lighters.
Candle would be rather sloppy.
Well, I'm so old-timey, I'm going back to when they only had candles.
People would get burned. Hey there, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to yet another edition of the Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein. I'm Tony Perkins.
I am Gary Stein.
And we are joined, as always, by our youthful ward, Rob Ford.
Hello.
Also known as Rob Ford Jr.
Yes.
Whatever you want to call him.
A lot of names.
Yeah,
He'll answer anything.
And we've got a special edition of the show today that we think you are going to love with some big time guests.
Now, you know that I do that dialect. And if I did that, we'd be off the air. Right? Because you know I'd love to follow you now.
You can, too. You're very good. Give us a little taste. It's okay. I'm asking for it.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, here we
do
go.
Do you have to get in the character?
Yeah, I got to get in the character. This is Gary Stein working with Tony Perkins right here. we got a podcast going on right now. What are you laughing at? Come over here. You're going to laugh at me? Well, listen, we got the best podcast you got on the radio. I don't care what you listen to. I don't care if you watch television. I don't care if you listen to radio. This is the best thing you're ever going to find. You ain't found nothing like this nowhere. You ain't going to ever see nothing that come off like this the way this come off right here.
Oh, yeah. I love it. That's so funny. Rob, so Gary.
Get beaten up, right?
No, you're not going to get
Tell
beaten
him what
up.
I used to do
Gary,
to you.
Gary will sometimes call me, and that's who's leaving the message. This character, the first two or three times he did it, when I would first hear the voice, and he's always playing it straight.
This is back at Good Morning America days when I started this.
Yeah, the first couple of times I'm hearing it, I would get the message. I'm thinking, is this my uncle? Is this my cousin? Who is this? And then, because of the stuff he's talking about, I realize, oh my God, this is Gary. It's so good.
I remember the first one I left him. The first one that started it off was just something about, like, how come you can do the weather every night and you don't have to be right? On my job, I got to be right all the time. Your job don't even matter if you ever be right. And he said to his wife, Rhonda, I think it's my uncle. I'm not really sure.
Very well done.
Thank you.
Listen, I've got stuff to tell you, folks. We know we thank you for listening. We encourage you to listen. Download all our shows because we've done a whole slew of them, and we think you'll like them. And I want to remind you to please subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's very easy to find. It's the Tony Perkins Show. The Gary Stein part isn't in the title there because it's too long. But go to...
That needs to be fixed immediately.
Fix it. Am I right, Rob, or is it the whole thing there?
The Tony Perkins Show is how it appears.
Okay, so go to iTunes Podcast, The Tony Perkins Show. Subscribe to it. You're getting the featuring Gary Stein.
Right.
You just won't see that part in the actual title right there.
Right.
But subscribe because here's what happens when you subscribe. The new episodes download automatically. To your electronic device, whether it's an iPod, an iPad, a toaster oven, or
a microwave,
or that's
a convection oven.
Right, you'll get it on all of your. That's right. You microwave something, you'll start hearing our voices.
That's right. Ow, it's hot in here.
So please do that. And if you like the show, please remember to leave a 5-star review. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, The Tony Perkins Show. You can follow us on Twitter @TPerkShow.
That is so well done.
Thank you very
much. I leave all the radio stuff up to you.
Thank you very much, Gary Starr.
You're very welcome,
Johnny
Perkins.
Trying to do my best with those announcements. And by the way, let me say this before we move on. Many of you are sampling us for the first time. Thank you very much. We want to welcome our new listeners. It's a fun show. You're going to hear some of the interviews that we've done, but there's a whole lot of other stuff that goes on this
show.
Yeah,
you know, really, if you get a chance, give us a try, because we're really, really good. Whoa, and you ought to just
well, you don't
please.
Have to beg.
No, I mean, really, listen to us if you can. No, and if you don't want to listen to us again, I don't think you were listening correctly the first time.
We're not that desperate, but we do want you to listen. The more the merrier.
Yeah, please. I mean, I really think you... You just do what you want, okay? Be yourselves.
All right, we got something great for you today. One of our favorite things that we've done on the shows is talk to some celebrities, many of whom we know, have met, Gary has been friends with, what have you. And we want to bring you a couple of those interviews now. First one is David Cassidy, who literally at one time was the biggest star on the planet, certainly the biggest pop star on the planet.
Well, I think he still holds the record as being the number one teen idol of all time.
I think you're probably right.
Yes.
Yeah. When he was with the Partridge Family playing Keith Partridge.
Right.
But he also had, this is weird, they would put out records under the Partridge Family name,
mm-hmm.
Of which he was a part, but then he had his own solo career under
right.
the David Cassidy name.
And he had been acting before the Partridge Family. He
right.
wanted to be an actor.
Right.
And he had done some TV, done some stage work, did theater. You know, I think being a teen idol in a way, you know, may have gotten in the way of some of the more serious things he wanted to do in his life.
I'm sure it did. So David opens up to us. It's a very revealing interview, much
really
to our
is.
Surprise, and gets emotional at times.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. Check it out. This is us with David Cassidy. David Cassidy, of course, as you know, member of the Partridge Family, Keith Partridge.
Oh, yeah.
And we got to talk about this because a lot of people thought he was Keith Partridge.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
yes.
Like, that was his name.
We have stories about that.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true.
Hello.
Hi, is this David Cassidy?
No, who is this?
I shouldn't ask. This is Tony Perkins and Gary Stein.
It should have been me asking, David,
yeah.
because then you would have said yes. You probably have to screen your calls, David. I would imagine.
That's why I have a blocked number, and I have to screen my calls. I get probably, and I'm not exaggerating, three or four bogus calls or people from fans and things that share my number and fans call. It's if I don't recognize a number, I rarely ever answer it. Anyway,
yeah.
What's
Hello.
Up, buddy?
Hey, it's good to talk to you.
This is good to talk to you too, Gary.
So this is Tony Perkins. It really he owns the show.
Hi, David. How are you?
Hi, Tony. Sorry if I don't recognize a number. I start like this. Hi, baby. Hi, baby.
David,
I bet you've
had to change your number most of your life. Have you?
Well, I used to have a system back in the day in the 70s that was an answering service that would respond with one of my aliases.
Oh.
And unless they would call and say, can I speak with Mr. Snipe?
Mr. Snipe?
Jackson Snipe.
Jackson Snipe.
I love that.
And the answering service, who would continuously get calls for David Cassidy, they knew who I was, but they were so discreet and so great. So I would get a call from the answering service, and they would say, Mr. Snipe, now this is before cell phones, this is like all during the whole 70s. Mr. Snipe, yes. I have so-and-so on the line. Oh, okay, put him through. And is there such a thing as an answering service now?
I don't know.
So.
I think they've gone out of business. Yeah, I think people don't need
them. I believe
anymore.
They've all gone out of business. Yeah, because of the technology and, you know, I think answering machines changed the world for them. And then I think with the technology now. But, yeah, I still have to avoid stalkers and things. So, anyway, it's great to talk to you guys.
Yes.
Are we rolling?
Yes,
yeah,
we are rolling.
We are.
Yeah,
you know,
welcome to the show.
Oh, good.
Yeah, welcome to
good.
The show.
I'm spending 10 minutes telling you about my personal life in the 70s about how to... apparently, Michael Jackson had a different approach, and I'm not sure how. He had, like, two different people that would screen him at his home. And this was before cell phones off also. And I remember speaking to Michael once or twice, probably twice. And I told him, he was quite an unusual guy, as we all know.
Yes.
But I told him that he could call me and ask for Jackson Snipe.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a long pause and said, "Who's that?" I said, "No, you don't understand.
You don't
this is how I do it."
Yeah.
So anyway, it was quite interesting, and it still is, because I get all these weirdo calls from people. Like, rarely are they wrong numbers, which is even more interesting to me, because it's people who share my number, and, you know, you give it to one person, and they go, "Guess who I know? You want to talk to David Cassidy?" Blah, 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 blah. I mean,
it's not
egocentric. No, it's just also not egocentric. It's just part of being famous and, you know, having a lot of fans and people that just want to talk to somebody who maybe they admire or maybe they don't. I don't know.
But David, David, you know what? You and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday. You know, the idea of Teen Idol didn't really exist. And you are, I believe, the biggest Teen Idol there ever was. And I'm talking, that's different than being just a rock star or whatever. There's a very specific thing about what it means to be a teen idol. So I would imagine that you had to invent ways of handling it right from the beginning and not knowing how to handle that, because it really...
Of course not.
...never happened to you before.
I was 19 years old when it started. Right. No. And by the way, my intent was, I was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I was always a musician and a songwriter and a singer. But I only did that. My first professional job was on Broadway in 1968 when I was 18 years old. It was my first professional job. I went to L.A. I got a screen test for a movie of which, believe it or not, Michael Douglas got the lead in.
Wow.
It's a very, very strange thing when fame, the kind of fame I had where people, you can't go in a restaurant, you can't go to the bank. Yeah. I didn't go to the bank for 25 years.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Although you went to
the
bank.
I'm not kidding. Well,
you took it to the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess what they hadn't robbed.
Right. Yeah, true.
You know.
True.
I had two business managers in the Hollywood business manager business that went to prison for embezzlement.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Tens of millions of dollars, buddy.
Not good.
And, No, it was just the way it is. And, you know, I take responsibility for it because it's my life. And I had two parents who had no education. They had no knowledge of how to deal with money. And they started out as literally living in a cold water flat as actors
mm-hmm.
and singers and entertainers and dancers, et cetera, on Broadway. So I wasn't given any education as how to do it, so I trusted people.
Right.
When they know you're an idiot when it comes to finances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they're going to take advantage of a 20-year-old, 25-year-old guy, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and you didn't have enough protection. You really didn't.
And it's not an uncommon story either, particularly
no,
for someone.
No, no. Listen, talk to Billy Joel. Talk to Sting. Talk to anybody. I mean, people I know that have lost much more than I have because they made most of their money in the 80s and 90s. I made my money in the 70s, and the difference is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking still tens of millions of dollars. And I can't be 19, 20, 21, 22, 33. I can't make that kind of money anymore. No one becomes has the largest fan club in history and makes $50,000 to $75,000 that they're now making $2 million on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not sour grapes about it.
Right, right.
It's just my time. I'm really not sour grapes about it. Look, it's my responsibility to take care of my life.
Right.
And I chose the people I was advised to trust. And unfortunately, they abused me.
Yeah.
And they were thieves. But in the end, you know what? I love my life. I love the fact I have a beautiful partner who's just complete support and my best friend and takes care of me and I take care of her. And mm-hmm. we have a beautiful relationship that is like something I've never had before. And it's a wonderful thing for me. I've never felt the kind of love I feel.
Which is fantastic, and that's where you want to be at this point in your life. I want to talk about...
Don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Don't you think?
Yeah,
absolutely.
It took me long enough to get here, man.
I want to talk about something that Gary kind of touched on, because you had such enormous... And you know, some of our... I think most of our listeners remember it well and know. Some younger listeners might not realize just how huge... You were, and there were two things going on at the same time. There was the Partridge Family going on.
TV. Which really helped.
Oh, sure.
Really helped launch me.
You had the solo career at the same time.
Yeah, well, it's at the same time. I mean, my fans were Partridge Family fans for the most part. Some of them prefer my stuff, and most of them prefer Partridge Family because it was involved and connected to and intricate to the Partridge Family, which at the time was the most successful half-hour situation comedy ever done in terms of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And my merchandising and everything else.
Right.
You know, it was enormous. By the way, I'm not insulted or in any way. I don't have an attitude about it. I'm just a real guy who just, I go to work. I love to create. You know, I've had a really, really very diverse and successful career. I've had failures that I learned from. Very few, thank God, but mm-hmm. most of my career have been quite successful. And, you know, I'm really grateful for the support and the love I've gotten from people, especially considering my alcoholism and dealing with being an addict and fighting that struggle, which is hundreds of millions of people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do drugs, never really did. I mean, not really. But alcoholism is a very, very, very serious disease. And my father had it and died from it. He was four times over the limit when he died.
Mm.
David, I think one of the reasons why people still are so drawn to you is because you're very open about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you are kind of an open book, and you're not apologizing for anything out there. And I think it's one of the things that the fans love about you. I've come to see your shows, and I've watched the audience, and they're absolutely the most thrilled and elated audience. But I told you the other day that what I was most impressed about was looking at you, because nobody is having a better time than you are. And
no,
I think that
not
they
on
love
the stage, they're not.
I think they love you for everything. I think they love you for your openness, for your musicianship. And yes, of course, they began as your fans when you were the biggest teen idol in the world,
mm-hmm.
not the country, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you have never stopped touring. But before we're done today, I want you to tell us about what you've got planned for 2015. But I find, listen, you and I really clicked, and I find you to be an open book and unapologetic, and I love that about you.
Thank you very much.
So
that's
I wanna,
a great compliment from you.
And I
want to
ask a question.
You.
You're welcome.
I want to ask a question based on that. When you do perform now and you meet people out and about, do some of them come to you and talk to you about their own problems and struggles maybe with alcohol because they've heard you talk about it?
Yes. And because I've been so open about it and have no secrets, because I can't live like that anymore. I hid for so many years. I actually, believe it or not, am a kind of a unique alcoholic, because I didn't really ever start drinking until about 12 years ago.
Mm.
And I'm 64 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So think about being 52, and I had a house many times, had homes which had a full bar for my friends and people who would come over and play music and everything else. I never drank, ever. That was so confusing to me. And the first few years, more than a few years, I was in such denial and going, look, I didn't ever drink for years.
Mm-hmm.
Not one glass of wine, nothing. So it's a very powerful and very, very deadly disease.
May I ask what made you start? I mean, if you'd gotten through so much of your life without, what made you start?
Unhappy marriage and frustration with, I promised myself I'd never leave my son. And maybe that was a mistake, because my father left me when I was 3 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, I was at all his baseball games. I was a coach. I showed up at all of his shows. My father never did one thing. He didn't show up at one of my shows. He didn't show up at, and I'm talking about when you're 8, 9, 10 years mm-hmm. old at church. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the soloist in the choir and all that. And I played Little League because I'm just an enormous baseball fan. And I'm sorry, I'm starting to get a little.
No, that's okay. No, I get it.
I'm going to interrupt.
A little emotional.
No, that's okay.
It's okay. I'm just starting to get a little emotional.
Okay.
Because I just remember the pain of it. And everybody else's dad would be there. And I would look over and my dad wouldn't. That's all.
In fact, you got more response from your stepfather than you did from your father.
Much more. Elliot Silverstein, a brilliant director, a graduate of Yale, one of the smartest men I've ever met. And he helped me a lot as a teenager because they got married when I was 12. He directed, I think, 3 or 4 Twilight Zones, Playhouse 90. I mean, you could start naming the greatest mm-hmm. television shows from that era. And he directed 2 classic films. Cat Blue, which, if you look it up, mm-hmm. Jane Fonda.
I don't have to look it up. I loved that movie.
Well, that was his first film, and he also directed A Man Called Horse.
Richard Harris.
God, you guys are good.
I have to say, I had no idea that was your stepfather who directed those movies.
I knew he was wildly talented. And your mother, too. You know, there's a big mystery.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people out there believe that Shirley Jones is your mother. And I know. And I know you've spent your life telling people that, no, Shirley's not my mother. And it was a coincidence that both of us wound up getting cast in The Partridge Family.
It was. I had done about 8 or 10 leads in television shows. And I went through 7 or 8 auditions going up the ladder, starting with, you know, the casting directors, then going to the producers, then going to the executive producers. And then you start going to the studio heads. And then you start going and auditioning for the network, and then you get a chance to go and do a real screen test in those days that was filmed. That's what it was, a screen test.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through that, and there were 2 teams that were chosen. Susan Day and I were on 1, but there still wasn't a mother that was chosen until the night before we did the screen test.
Wow.
Now, listen,
wow.
The night before. Because that's the way television works. You get cast with, can you be there in an hour? And no, serious.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, no, I know.
I know actors that were hired and said, how soon can you get down to, you know, Ventura Boulevard? And no, I'm not kidding.
Oh, I know. I believe you.
I'm not joking. I mean, they never did that with me. I show up on the set. I remember walking across the soundstage. And there used to be these old phones and stuff that were on, like, little platforms. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking 1970 now. Mm-hmm. So I look across, actually, it's 1969, the week before 1970. I think we shot the pilot when I was 19, and it was the Christmas week, between Christmas and New Year's.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it was basically 1970. But I remember walking across, and listen, Shirley was my dear friend. She was a wonderful stepmother to me, mm-hmm. and an Academy Award winner. And someone that really helped me in those early days how to handle big-time fame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had pictures of ourselves. Both of us were on the cover of Life magazine. And it was really cool because we both got it when I think we were 21 or something,
mm-hmm.
although 20 years apart.
Well, 20 years
but
apart,
still,
yes.
It was one of the ires of my father's frustration because he was more talented than both of us.
Hmm.
He was a genius. I'm not kidding.
I want to mention just quickly for those who may be unaware that your father was Jack Cassidy, who I remember very well growing up seeing on TV all the time. Unfortunately, I think his name is kind of faded a little bit. Younger people don't know
him. Of course.
Yeah. But
you know
why?
Why? He died at 49.
Well, yeah.
It wasn't until the last 3 years. Look, unless you're on television or making movies, he got nominated for Emmy Awards. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many bizarre, horrible things with someone who was self-obsessed as he was,
yes.
Alcoholic, bipolar, and manic depressive.
Oh, my God.
Manic depressive. So, unfortunately, a couple of us, his sons have some of those characteristics mm-hmm. and some of that genetic inheritance. Mm-hmm. And I'm an open book about all of it because I worshipped him. I can remember saying when I was a kid, you know, my dad's the most talented person I ever met. And, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, George C. Scott, I mean, brilliant actors and directors would come up to me and say, your father's the most talented person I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. David, he was an amazing singer. And, you know, the other day when you and I were
talking,
I told you, hey, I saw him on Broadway and It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. And you said, yeah, so did I. And you said,
genius in that.
He was fantastic. And you said, I saw him too. And it made me sad because I thought, there's David supporting his father and going and seeing the show. When did his father ever go and see him in a show? Did you
Only
ever,
once.
Your father died so young, did you ever
yeah.
have an opportunity to let him in on the loss you felt and the disappointment you felt in his ability to really nurture you as a dad should have? Did you ever get a chance to do any of that?
No. My father was such a powerful presence.
A powerful presence.
Here's the voice. Sean! As soon as we made any noise, I would go over to the boys' house because I didn't live with them. I lived with my mom, and the three boys are my half-brothers.
Right.
Or, I don't know, step-brothers, whatever you call them.
Half, yeah.
But they're
half.
My brothers. Yeah. So I would go over on the weekends as a teenager, and the boys, as soon as they would see me, would start fighting because they wanted me to come over and separate them and sort of wrestle with them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're 10, they're 12, they're 9, 7. You know what I mean? And it was really sweet. But if it was before noon on a weekend, my father, of course, had been out drinking until 4 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. and was hungover. And if we made any noise as children, he would come down. I can remember this so... You ask any three of my brothers, they'll all tell you the same story. Sean? That voice. Oh, no, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
And he had that voice. I mean, I got it too, but it took me a while to get the kind of depth he had. and we all trembled. And he became, because he was starting to take pills, I'm not sure what they were, he became really out of control. And his disease and everything else caught up with him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't talk to him for the last 9 months of his life.
Right.
Because he came to my house and started throwing chairs at me. And that was it for me. I was mm-hmm. like, okay, it's jealousy. And obviously I was working from 6:30 in the morning until 11, 12 o'clock at night. Because after the Partridge Family was over at 7:10 at night, I drove over the hill and started recording for both myself, that's one artist, and also for the Partridge Family, mm-hmm. which is the second artist I recorded at.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing a television series and doing that. And then on the weekends, I would do 4 shows on the road, concerts, and then fly back. Do you think I was tired?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, sure.
You're still living a rough schedule.
Nah. No. I mean, I have a great schedule now. And quite frankly, I have arthritis in my back, and I keep getting shots for it. Mm-hmm. And it's really painful for me. And to travel a lot and then do back-to-back-to-back shows is really hard for me now.
You do it when you want to do
it. You know, I love to play.
Your band uh-huh. is all-star material. They are the best. I couldn't believe how brilliant everybody was.
Each one of them are so unique, so talented.
I want to mention, since we're talking about this, you're going to be at B.B. King's in New York. When is that coming up?
I think B.B. King's, you know, I don't have my schedule in front of me. But
they can check your schedule. In fact, I know you're putting part of the 2015 season together.
Yeah, I'm starting in January, which is unusual for me.
Right.
But because of my back, I've been off for over 6 months. I haven't done a show. They're coming down on the 19th of December. We're doing, in my life, the second Christmas show I've ever done. Now, this is not snow and dancers with hats on and stuff. You know, I just can't do that.
Right.
It's just not me.
Right.
I'm a musician. So we're going to play some great Christmas stuff. I have an original song that's on the original Partridge Family Christmas album that's brilliant.
Yeah. That's a Christmas favorite.
Yeah, it sold over 2 million in like 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, that was off the chart.
Yep, that's
and
right.
And those were albums. Anyway, they cost $2.50. They did.
No, I'm
not kidding.
Right. That's no, about we know. Right. That's about right.
You know, that's why I got a grand total of like 50 grand.
You know,
30 million records, you get like 50 grand.
Right, the albums were so cheap.
I don't know what it was, but it was ridiculous. But it's okay. They're in the business. Sony's in the business of doing what they do.
Sure.
And I'm talking about studios.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the music business. You can talk to Little Richard. You can talk to anybody you want from the 50s or the 60s. They never got paid.
Oh, I know. No. Oh, it's horrible. No. It's horrible.
They got paid nothing.
Yeah, it's horrible.
So I got a couple of nickels, you know? And it is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. I accept the fact that I was where I was at the time, and I had a fantastic time. I loved making records with these great musicians that I played with in the studio and writing with the people I got to write with and learning from the time I was 19, learning from like Jerry Goffin of Goffin and King.
Mm-hmm.
Look that up. You know, you make me feel like a natural woman. Mm-hmm. He wrote the lyric to that. And Carole King's pretty freaking talented, okay?
Oh, yeah. You're not kidding. You're not kidding. David, I got a question for you. For the challenges now, like the arthritic problems and everything that you've mentioned, and of course I've seen you on stage. It doesn't look like you have any problem because you're just in the moment. Do you think that in some ways you're having a better time musically now than you did when you were a teen idol?
No question.
Because it seems to me that you are. That's my feeling.
Not even close. I revel in the magic that we create together because this band is so great. And the chemistry that we have, you know, I have such appreciation for it. Nobody has appreciation for it when you're 20.
Right.
You just go, yeah,
right.
I'm the guy, you know. And I wasn't egotistical about being the guy. I knew. You know, I'm playing to 73,000 people, and I'm the only act on the bill.
Right.
So how can you, when you're 22, 3, 4 years old, how do you appreciate it like that?
Mm-hmm. You can't even process it. You can't even process it.
No, and I'm in the bubble, you know.
Right, that's right.
I can't go out. I live with 30 people that travel with me, 30. And not just my band, but all the security guards and everything else. And, you know, I'm not complaining about it. It was a magical experience. But in truth, now it's my real time to be a musician, to play guitar, to do the things I love to do, and also play my hits that I like, the ones I really like. Like, people ask me to play this or that, and I'm like, no, I'm not playing that. It's a suit that just doesn't fit anymore.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yes.
Sure. Let me ask you, I want to ask you two questions, and then we'll let you go. We've taken far too much of your time.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
I love that you're with us.
Number one, you have a website, davidcassidy.com, is that right?
Correct.
So
yes.
People can find out.
As difficult as that could be to remember. DavidCassidy.com.
So the schedule's there.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's where people can go to find out where you're going
to
be playing.
See, like, dates. Right now, I'm just going to play in January and see how I come out of it.
Sure.
Because of my back.
Sure.
I just can't work as much as I used to.
Sure.
You know, it's the travel. The hour and a half, 2 hours I spend on stage is the best part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the other 22 hours of traveling.
Right.
And moving and stretching and vocalizing and going through it. It's really hard for me now. And, you know, I just have arthritis in my lower left back, and there's nothing I can do about it. I don't take pain pills. It'll tear up my liver and my you know, everything. It's just not good. And also, I certainly don't take prescription pain pills, but it's better just to feel the adrenaline me gets me to the point where I don't feel it when I'm on the stage.
That's apparent.
When you're on stage, you're never sick. You know, I used to do stand-up comedy. I could have the flu, but then for that 1 hour that I would be on stage, I'm perfectly fine. It's fantastic. It's the adrenaline.
Isn't that it?
Yeah.
There's nothing quite like the rush of doing it. And even today, I go, man, the same as when I was 18.
Yeah.
It's so exhilarating. It's just hard to even describe to people if you don't do it.
Right. That's right. Last question, and just a brief answer for all your fans, because, you know, your name does pop up in the news every now and then for the reasons that we don't like, but you're doing fine now. You're doing good, right?
Oh, I'm doing really well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I've been, since January 11th this year, sober, and I've been going through, I went through 4 months of rehab.
Mm-hmm.
I went through also an intensive outpatient program, and I go to counseling, and, you know, I need to work on it every day.
Sure,
because every day can be a struggle. Some days aren't. and many days are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just have to stay sober. You know, I said to myself, you know, there's only really one thing I can't do, and that's to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that,
you can do everything.
I'm like, yeah, baby, I'm alive. I'm cool, you know?
Yes, you are.
It's like I feel like I'm literally, other than my back and the arthritis in my hands, which I have, and that's, I can overcome that to some degree.
Well, David,
I'm just kind of slow hand now. That's all.
As you, well, not a bad nickname. That's Clapton's nickname. David, as you know, obviously, you have a wife who loves you, a family that loves you, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people who love you and continue to have a warm place in their hearts for you, continue to come out and see you, and we are among them. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for letting me share my life with you guys, because I rarely have the platform to do so, and I want to go on, like, extra.
Well, I think it's one, of the great things about you, David. And, you know, when we get together, we got a lot more to talk about, you and I. We discussed that the other day. I look forward to it.
Me too, pal.
Yep.
And God bless you, and send my love to Craig.
I will.
I'll be talking to him tomorrow, probably.
Terrific.
Okay?
Yes.
All right.
Take care, David.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Bye.
Yep. Take care.
David Cassidy.
Let me tell you one of the things that I absolutely love about what you and I get to do together on an almost weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
We never really know where we're going.
No.
And it's one of the pleasures of this show for me that we come up with some thoughts, we don't write anything down, and you and I just go. I bet you didn't know that was going to happen.
No, did not know that was going to happen.
He's pretty deep.
He's pretty deep, and you know he had a couple of struggles going on.
Oh, he had a lot of struggles, Tony. And you know what? He is revealing about it, and he's not apologetic about it. He's just in touch with the foibles, with the problems, with the things that he's had to get over in his life. He and I have talked about it before, but not like this.
What happens to you when you're a kid, and that relationship with your parents, and I think particularly for a boy and his father, man, it marks you for life.
Well, you know what? The relationship that he had with Jack Cassidy, that really created the life struggle that he was going to have forever.
That's right.
Some things you don't get over.
That's right.
You learn to live with them, but you don't get over them.
Absolutely right. Anyway, we thank David Cassidy for being on. We thank him for being so open and revealing with us.
Truly a great guy.
Yeah. Some of the folks that we talk to, it's so much fun, and they're so on and naturally funny and roll with the punches. Tom Bergeron, who, number one, I was thrilled that he's one of the busiest men in TV.
Yes,
you know, he's got Dancing with the Stars. He had America's Funniest Home Videos.
Right. Hollywood Squares. And we started years ago at FX with the morning show on FX called Breakfast Time.
Right.
And I really don't think that people have ever known quite how funny Bergeron is. He's a great host.
Yes.
That's not what he meant to do.
Right.
I think he's very happy with the way his life went.
Yep.
But he is one of the funniest people I know.
He gets his marks in. He gets his comments in.
But he does.
The shows that he's on are heavily formatted, you know, Dancing with the Stars. You can get a quip out, you know, what have you. But, you know, he's one of those guys who could have done late night TV,
He's one of the quickest people I know.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Well, he certainly was quick with us when we talked to him. A funny guy, great guy. I think you're going to enjoy this one as well. Tom Bergeron. You've known him for how long?
Tom?
Yeah.
I've known Tom since 94. We've been very good friends since then.
And let's try to get him on the phone. It's very funny because when you and I met in 99, I don't know if you remember this, a lot of when we were coming up with stuff, let's try this on Good Morning America, you would say to me, well, you know, on Breakfast Time, we would do this and that. And I hated it for a while.
Well, you'll also hate that there's nobody more humble
he's great.
Than Tom Bergeron.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about real, he's the real thing.
All right, I think we got him on the phone. Intro music, please, ladies and gentlemen. Joining us on the phone from Hollywood, California, the star of Dancing with the Stars, one of the best guys on TV, Mr. Tom Bergeron. Tom, you there?
Hello.
Hey, Tom, I have no idea what voice Tony was just using to introduce you. That was his introduce a show host voice. That's what it was.
I got a little bit of Wink Martindale out of it.
One of my favorites.
It was me trying to impress you a little bit. It was my kind of game show announcer voice because I have much respect for you and I just want it to be done right and I want to sound professional in your presence. So that's what that was.
So that was a respectful introduction. It sounded a tad mocking, actually.
This is going well.
I think, Tom, I think you picked up on something. It was more than a tad.
No, not at all. We are thrilled that you're with us.
I'm not that happy.
Tony, you didn't tell me Gary would be involved in this.
Yeah, you know what? His name is on the show, so we have to.
I thought that was a mistake. You told me that was a misprint.
Yes, but it's lasted quite a while.
Right, that's right.
I know. Congratulations on this, by the way. I've listened and enjoyed it. Gary and I go back a long time. Tony, you and I have worked together in the past as well on GMA.
Yes.
So this is a nice little reunion here.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm really glad you're doing this. It's really wonderful. I thought you might say yes, but then I thought you might lie and just tell me you were way too busy.
I was going to have my people deal with you, but they didn't show up for work, and I took a call. So what are you going to do?
You know, Tom, I wanted to start by asking you something because we met in 1994 when we launched the FX Network, and you were the host of Breakfast Time, and it was... We will talk. We need to talk about that because we've both admitted it was the most amazing experience we ever had in television. But what happened to you after that? I just was curious about where have you been?
Well, you know, it's really a tribute to the Witness Protection Program that I've been anonymous as I have.
Oh my goodness.
Oh boy.
You know what? We're obviously kidding. You first of all, let me say this. And I know you and Gary are very good friends. What's great about this whole thing, and I just want everybody to know, is that, Tom's a big shot. He's a big shot. Hosts the number one. Well, but you host the number one show on TV with Dancing with the Stars, one of the perennial favorites, America's Funniest Home Videos. You are a busy guy, very much in demand. I know you were just here in D.C. a couple of months ago for the 4th of July show. Yeah. And Tom's people did not answer the phone. It was Tom. He's got no people. And I was, when Gary told me that you had listened to the show, we were both so delighted to hear that and that you said yes right away. I just thought that's very cool because I know you're a busy guy. I know you got a lot going on. So props to you for that. Thanks for doing it. We really do appreciate it.
Well, truly my pleasure. I really, you know, I started in radio and I have a real affinity for not only what Howard Stern would call terrestrial radio, but all of the different natures that radio has evolved into, primarily the podcast. So, you know, I just think it's a great medium and you guys are great at it. So I'm happy to be part of it.
Thank you so much. We were talking about Breakfast Time and every time you and I bring it up, we talk about the freedom and how ahead of its time it was. I don't really think there's ever been anything like it, do you? I mean, we talk about it every time we almost get together.
No, I agree with you. Not that I've seen, and I would strongly advise anybody who wonders what the hell we're talking about to go on YouTube and just type in Breakfast Time, FX Breakfast Time, and you'll see people have posted videos, a lot of compilation videos are on YouTube, as a matter of fact, which give you a real sense of how wonderful the show was, how liberating it was for us to all do. It was we had a basic outline, obviously, but it was largely improvised, and it was just an incredible group of people that were brought together for it.
You did something unbelievable, Tom. I remember that you had a little tiny blue index card, I think the smallest index cards they make, and everybody wanted to hand you a rundown of who we were going to have on the show for the day, and we knew that we could veer and go anywhere we wanted. You put the entire show, all you needed, on one little index card, and Tom, you went for 2 solid hours.
Yeah,
I couldn't get over it. I couldn't believe you did that.
What I would do in my dressing room in the morning, I'd take the rundown and I'd say, all right, what in each segment, and you know, Lori Hibbert, now Gelman, my co-host, we'd swap off on segments, and we had a great cadre of road warriors like Phil Hogan, who's now an Amazing Race, who would be somewhere in the country. But I would look at what's the two top points to me of any given segment. And I would just, with a little flare pen, write that, you know, in a little place on the card. And I knew that, failing anything else, I could milk those 2 points for a good 5 minutes.
you were amazing at it. I studied that because I also did a lot of improv, and I thought, You were great at it. You really improvised the entire show.
Well, Tom, let me set the stage for people who aren't aware of this. And Gary, you went over it very quickly. You guys really did launch FX,
yes.
The FX network. This is back in what year?
94.
94, right? Okay. And it's breakfast time. Gary, you're the producer. You're one of the.
I was a coordinating producer of the show. But when you're done, I want to tell you what my real job was.
Okay, so you're a coordinating producer. It's Tom. It's Laurie Hibbert. Who
yes.
also made the transition over to the network show when it moved over to
right.
Fox and became
Fox After Breakfast.
Fox After
yeah.
Breakfast.
And became a disaster.
Yeah.
yeah. But you know what? And we'll get into that. But that was when I first became aware of you. So I didn't get to see Breakfast Time. I saw Fox After Breakfast, which I thought,
right.
you know, it was a version of Breakfast Time, but I hadn't seen Breakfast Time. So I thought Fox After Breakfast initially was great.
I think that's fair, Tony, because, you know, people who didn't see the cable show and what we did there didn't have that frame of reference. The rock group Yes, for example, was so enamored by the Fox After Breakfast version that they reunited on the show. So,
really?
Betty Shabazz, Malcolm X's widow, the late Betty Shabazz, was a big fan. She came and had breakfast with us. And so I have to appreciate that even that show in its infancy
right.
had elements of the cable show that people responded to. It just didn't have enough and it didn't sustain them.
The network got involved.
Didn't sustain because it started to get dismantled after being on for a few months, and that was really the undoing of that show. They wanted to improve on Breakfast Time, and that really wasn't possible. I do want to say what my job was, Tom, because I've never had a better job in my life. My job, besides being a coordinating producer, was to be right up against Tom the whole show, walk the set with him, have a headset on, and we had the show planned, but if something funny came up, it was my job to get Tom in trouble. One example was I would sidle up to Tom and I would say, the donut guy on the corner just ran out of donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's grab camera 5, which was our street cam.
Right.
And let's go out and order 200 donuts. And Tom would either look at me with like just a little imperceptible no, or it would be a little sly nod of the head, and I would say in my headset, we're going outside after the next commercial break. Kill what was coming up. And that freedom, Tom, it was the most fun I ever had because I had to be in tune with you. And I couldn't have had I used to ride my bike to work at 5 a.m. I looked like the Wicked Witch on the bike, you know, because I raced
Mrs. Gulch,
there.
Yeah.
I was Mrs. Gulch. I raced there because I didn't know what was going to happen for the day.
Speaking of donuts, do you remember the time that I decided to bring donuts to Dennis Franz and Jimmy Smits while they were shooting a scene from NYPD
Blue? I was standing next to you.
And I walked by the actual New York cops they had hired for security. And I didn't realize they were in the middle of a take, and some poor woman is playing a shooting victim in the car. And I'm walking up, and they're shooting me for the FX show from our camera on the building across the street. You see me walk up going, Mr. Franz,
Yeah, but then what happened with him?
Well, he was great because he had watched FX, so he recognized me. Jimmy Smits was on the other side of the car, thank God. He looked like he wanted to kill me. We finally had to send Laurie out to kind of make peace, you know. Send the attractive Canadian girl out.
Let me. I want to ask you a question. Did you? And I've always wondered about that because you're naturally very funny, and you've incorporated that to varying degrees with every gig you've had. Did you ever do stand-up?
I did, very, very briefly. I wasn't really, I didn't have that kind of skill set to try to make drunks laugh at 2 in the morning, you know. I like improv theater and improv comedy and radio, where I started.
Yeah.
And that's where I got my improv chops, really, and just that and 8 years at parochial school pissing off nuns.
Yeah, I didn't get to that. Hey, Tom, we've mentioned this many times to each other. I've said to you, you know, you've had an unbelievable career, and I'm not really trying to bury you like it's over, but. Hollywood Squares and America's Funniest Home Video and Dancing with the Stars, you bring a lot to that, and you bring humor to it, your natural humor. But I've known you a long time, and I knew you at a time where you needed to be funny all the time, and you were hysterical. And I don't really think that people know that you really were right for late night. You really should have been maybe back then a late night talk show host, because you had everything. It's a very tough job to be able to be funny, to be a good interviewer, to keep track of the time, to know what's going on, and to handle all of those things. I said to you once that you were the only person who could ever follow Johnny Carson.
Wow.
That is probably the highest praise anybody can get hosting realm, because to me he was and still is the gold standard, and
for us too.
I suppose you know, back 20 years ago it might have been something that could have been fun. But as I've said to you, and we were talking about it yesterday, as a matter of fact, just when we were talking privately about me doing this, that fire in my gut long since burned out. I mean, I really like the kind of lifestyle I have now and the pace at which I'm working now, and the idea of going to work every day. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I get it.
I have to say, and you know, we met a couple of times at GMA, and Gary, you know, I inherited Gary from you, essentially. I mean, Gary and I started working it. Yeah. And but his job...
The ceremonial passing of the stein.
That's right. And you know, his job with me was very similar to his job with you, which is why I'm hurt when I hear him say that working with you was the best thing he ever did. But you know, his job was to find the funny, and you know, we had to be out with the crowd and do all that kind of thing, and we were very successful with that. But as you know, you had a lot of freedom in your radio days, and then with the Breakfast Time show, as soon as you get over to the network, that starts being, you know, things are, there are committees running everything and looking at everything, and you start to lose some of that freedom. So it became a little bit harder. We still did, I think, pretty well.
We did.
Yeah. But it's a harder thing. It's a different thing. And look, you're an ABC guy. You've been with the network how long now? You know how all that runs.
Oh, absolutely. I remember one of the first times back in the, probably 97, I guess, I filled in on GMA, filled in for Charlie, and I actually got up from the seat because I had an idea to just walk across the set, and people were having massive coronary. Oh my God, he got up!
Oh, yeah, it's a very different thing.
Can I ask a question? Hi, it's Rob. I'm a massive fan of the Jerry Lewis Telethon. And one thing that I've noticed about you, and I think that really Dancing with the Stars might be the last entertainment-based live broadcast on network television, and you are so natural and engaging on live television, it's almost a lost art that you can just get on there and do a live show with no safety net. And when I would watch you do the overnights on the Jerry Lewis Telethon, you had such a skill, they would give you the worst specialty acts to work with for 6 hours.
Oh, Rob, I got to tell you just one quick story about that very thing. And it was my decision to think, you know, we're on at 3 in the morning. I'm going to say the following thing, and if they never invite me back, what the hell? So there was an act named Bob the Spoon. Right now, Bob the Spoon had spoons of various size, and by banging them, he was playing Flight of the Bumblebee. All right, so it comes to me, and I said, "So that's Bob the Spoon," and I'm watching Bob the Spoon, and I'm thinking, I'm thinking, what the fork was that?
But what I always loved about you is that you would be watching something like Bob the Spoon, mm-hmm. and you could pay it off,
oh, yeah.
let people know at home that I can't believe I'm watching this either, yeah. but you were always so respectful to the act while they were there, and it was a subtle line yeah. that you always walked. You did a great job. Was it a thrill or was it a hassle being on at 3 in the morning?
No, it was great because it was like, you know, it was like Fellini with a tote board, you know? It was
Write that down. That's good. That's good. Tom, I've told Gary this, and I'm being very, very honest here. I first noticed you on the breakfast show.
Breakfast time?
No, the show.
Fox After Breakfast.
And I took note because I feel that you and I are kind of cut from the same cloth. There are things that I've wanted to do.
Tom, are you black?
Tony, are you black?
Yeah, I'm a brother from another mother.
Another brother from another mother, yes. Yeah. But you know, the things that I've seen you do are the kinds of things that I've wanted to do. Some things, there's some similarities there. We both started from a funny background. We both did the radio yeah. thing. And you know, as you well know, back then, radio was great. Radio is now, it's devoid of personality now. That's why people are doing podcasts like this. But I've always watched you and looked up to you. But I have to say there have been times where I've had a little bit of jealousy because I thought, oh, my, he's got this gig. I would love to do something like that. It's been, in my mind, it's been a little friendly competition that's gone on. But I think, you know, when we talk about Carson and following someone like Carson, and I don't say this lightly because, as Gary's probably told you, I'm a huge Carson devotee, and I came up in that era. I appreciate that skill set and people who do what you do and the kinds of things that I like to do. Hosting, I think hosting is a great gig, you know, hosting, whether it's a talk show, the shows that you've hosted when you were on Hollywood Squares. Oh my God, it was so funny. And I think you're great at it. I'm not saying it just to kiss up to you. You're really, really great at it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Carson epitomized this one element, and he talked about Jack Benny as well. And you can see the influences in Carson.
Totally.
Jack Benny,
yes.
Oliver Hardy. And one of the things that I always admired and continue to try to emulate is just to remember that if you're lucky enough to have a regular gig, you're there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to let the guests shine.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's okay
to be there to let the guests score or to save them if they're dying. Because, you know, like Benny, there would be shows going back to that, both his radio and then later television show. He didn't really get many laughs,
mm-hmm.
but he set them up. You know, he was the guy who set them up or reacted to the characters. And at the end of the day, it was the Jack Benny show. At the end of the day, it was the Carson Tonight Show.
That's right.
And that was part of what he saw as his role, was to make the whole show look good.
Yep,
absolutely.
He didn't have to have the last laugh. He didn't have to top his guest. If the guest is shining, the show is shining.
Exactly.
I think we had the same influence as the three of us because I loved him, but I loved who he admired. I loved Jack Benny also, and I'm a Laurel and Hardy fan big time, and it pains me when I mention Laurel and Hardy, not even just to young people, but older people who never heard of them is shocking to me because they set the bar for comedy. Oliver Hardy is the first person to use the audience as a character and to look at the camera like, can't you help me here? You know,
right.
I mean, all those, sometimes I sound like a dinosaur because I feel like those people are my influences and I admire them more than anybody I can find today.
Well, I gave an interview the other day to ABC News about the 25th anniversary of America's Funniest Videos, and Chris Connolly said to me, so how do you see your role on the show? I said, well, you know, Bob Saget, as a comedian, would sometimes compete against the videos, I think of myself as a broadcaster, and the analogy I would use and talk about an old reference, I said, is Martin and Lewis. you know, if I'm sort of tone deaf Dean Martin, the videos are the Jerry Lewis of the show. and my job is to kind of set them up, you know. So, Gary, I'm using these really old references, too. Don't feel bad.
That's what, good. That's, good. It's what we do frequently on this show.
It helps Gary stay interested.
Right.
And hopefully interesting, but we don't know about that. Hey, Tom, I just want to ask something.
Yeah.
So 19 years ago when my son was born, when Ben was born, you were amazing. You were right there. And you said to me, you know, I've got this great video camera, and it took it's a long time ago, so it took the full VHS tapes. And
It was massive.
And you gave it to me, and I used it, and I took millions of videos of Ben, and then when Billy was born. And then I remember you called me and you said, do you still have that camera? I think I'd kind of like to have it back. And and I gave it back.
It still works.
I was wondering if I could have it again.
Well, wait. Why did you want it back?
Because it worked. It was good.
Not only that, but that was the camera that I took the videos of my girls when they were born, and they first came home. So, you know, I hadn't really intended to give it to them for good.
Yeah, see, I missed that. See, I wound up missing that. I thought it was a gift. Yeah. But it turned out to be a borrow. Yeah.
To this day, they still use it for reaction shots on Dancing with the Stars.
Hey, you know what? What I remember about that is that I am still grateful that you said to me, if you don't have anything, you're going to regret it. Here, take this. And
that's cool.
I still look at those videos, and I can't believe how fast they grew up. But I remember that. And also, I don't know if I should say the number, but I'm going to.
Dumb.
I turned 40 knowing you, and you brought in a present for me the next day, and it was called Fly Fishing Through Your 40s. And it was an early audio tape, and I listened to it because I thought, if anything is going to help me retain my youth. And then I think when you turned 40, I think I sent it back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, screw this. Where's my camcorder?
Tom, I want to ask you a question. There's a story I know. I don't remember if you've talked about it publicly, but I know the story. And if you're willing to share, I hope
keep it clean.
Well, it's a clean story. You spent a short period of time at Good Morning America. Do you still have your house in Connecticut?
McCree Manor.
Yes. Can you please explain?
That's New Hampshire, right?
Is it New Hampshire or
where? That's the New Hampshire. Yeah, our sort of vacation place. Well, here's the story. While Fox After Breakfast was coming apart, Rune Arledge, like you, Tony, was watching that show and saw something that he and David Weston, who was the head of ABC News at the time, said, this is the guy we want to replace Charlie Gibson. I was like sitting on the floor doing an interview with a puppet over my shoulder. So I have these clandestine meetings with Rune Arledge and David Weston, and they decide to, once I've ultimately left Fox After Breakfast, give me a test week when Charlie's on vacation, Charlie Gibson, a great guy. And so Elizabeth Fargus and I do this week together, and she and I just instantly hit it off. She could not have been more welcoming. She was wonderfully generous and helpful to me, and we had great chemistry. And that week actually got a cheer in the old Cheers and Jeers column in the TV Guide.
Mm-hmm.
So on the strength of that, they signed me to be the person who would follow Charlie Gibson. In the interim, however, Elizabeth did not get that job to replace Joan London. It went to a California anchor named Lisa McCree.
Mm-hmm.
And to say that Lisa McCree and I did not have chemistry would be to understate it grandly. If you were watching close enough to your television, you could feel the wind chill.
I never got the feeling you didn't like her. She just
I didn't have an opinion at all.
No.
Except that she wouldn't make eye contact.
But she did. Yeah.
Holy moly. She was the one that, you know, I almost had a coronary among several others when I got up that time and dared to move across the bed. So it was very quickly obvious that this wasn't going to work. They had made a commitment to Lisa, but I had a contract that if they didn't announce me as Charlie's replacement by a certain date, they would have to cut me a check. Mm-hmm. At one point, they said, you know, we'll let you out of the contract if you want. And I thought, oh, no, I'm waiting around for that check. Mm-hmm. So it didn't work out. They cut me the check. And my wife and I bought a vacation home in New Hampshire, near where we met years earlier, with mm-hmm. the proceeds from that check. And we called it McCree Manor. And I had a little gold plated plaque made for my office that says McCree Manor, established summer 1999, from cold shoulder to warm heart.
I love that story. Yeah, awesome. I love that story. I want to tell you something. I believe I was Rune Arledge's last hire. I think I was.
Oh, no really?
Yeah, and because I came in the aftermath of all of that, because then Lisa was gone, and they were trying to figure out what they were going to do with the show. They ended up bringing Charlie and Diane back, Spencer Christian.
Yeah,
and then I came in. But when I first met with David Weston, it was fascinating. They called me. They knew my work here in Washington. I was on a morning show, the Fox morning show here, and I was out in the field and did a lot of, you know, I was doing the weather, but I was out there a lot and funny remotes. So they liked all that. That's what they wanted. They brought me up. Yeah. I'll never forget. I met with Amy and Tellus. I'm sure you know Amy. And then we went to David Weston's office. He walked in and I stood up. We met and he said, "So, you were a stand-up comic?" Yeah, I said, I was. And we sat down and we talked about comedy. That's what he was really interested in, which I thought was very cool. There may have been one or two sentences about, you know, morning TV or whatever. That was it. He left and they offered me the job a couple of days later. But it was, they were looking at, you know, as with you, they were looking at some kind of different personalities and all of that to bring to the show. They were just having a hard time figuring it all out.
Well, yeah, Kevin Newman was the newsreader when I was filling in, and Canadian guy and really a nice guy. He and I got really friendly, and when it was, and I was out the day that Princess Diana was killed. Mm. And because Kevin had worked in Canada and knew the workings of the monarchy and all that stuff, he did a great job. And as a result of that, and Lisa would actually look at him. And so then they came to me, and that was when they offered to let me out of the deal. I said, no, that's fine. Put him in, and I'll wait. But ka-ching, I'm waiting. It's all right. So Kevin and I at one point were having a conversation, and privately, and I said, you know, whether they pick you, Kevin, or me, whoever gets it is screwed. Because they weren't dealing with the real issues, which was you've got endemic issues in the show at the time, which they've since masterfully taken care of. And sure enough, they were there for 8 months, and you know they got blown out.
Yep, that's right. TV's a crazy thing. I want to ask you about congratulations on all the success with Dancing with the Stars. What a phenomenal show!
Thank you.
The people you get on the show are amazing, and it's just really incredible. America's Funniest Videos. Are you in your last year? Is that right?
Yes, I am. This is the we just started shooting the 25th season, which premieres October 5th.
Wow!
On ABC, and this will be my last. This will be my 15th, and I had a goal a few years ago. I said, I want to really get to the 25th anniversary of the show and take it through the 25th. And then, having done it for 15 years by that point, mm-hmm. it just felt like the right time to, as I said, pass the pinata stick off to somebody else.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that the longest running entertainment show on ABC television? I mean, that's like Gunsmoke numbers.
Yeah, it's better than Gunsmoke numbers, I think, at this point.
Wow.
Congratulations. That's very cool to be a part of that for so long.
Yeah, no, and it's a real tribute to how, in the age of YouTube, Vin DeBona and his team have been able to keep that show fresh and visually and the way they package the videos.
Yes.
The New York Times had a story the other day that I didn't even realize this, that our numbers were up 11% over the summer in the Young Demo, and that it's the number one, they always have subcategories for everything, but it's the number one family viewing show on TV.
Yes, well, that's right. That's everybody can watch it together.
My kids have the season pass on all our DVRs.
You are
on my TV all the time.
Yeah.
The funniest thing, I was sitting in a bar or a restaurant bar yesterday at the Grove after a production meeting for dancing, and on the TV was of me from 2001 hosting AFE, and I'm looking up at this brown-haired version of myself. And then, is there anything else on that you can find?
I remember that guy very well when I had brown hair, too. Yeah.
Hey, at least we have hair.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
Hey, Tom, I want to tell you something I've carried with me for a very long time. It was a funny moment. We were at Times Square Studios. You had just done, I think, some radio in the radio booth there, maybe a satellite tour or something. And we went out to get a bite, but before we did that, you had to make a phone call, and it was somebody who was asking you about whether or not you were available to do a particular project. And you said, I don't really know. I've got this pilot I have to do. And then they obviously asked you what it was about. And you said, well, I'm not completely clear on it, but it's called Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, boy.
And I know I'm shooting it in like 2 weeks, but I have no idea about my availability. You know, we'll have to see. I was with you when you were just finding out you were doing this pilot.
And it should not, by any logical stretch, have worked. I mean, the slug line, a celebrity ballroom competition, it's like, oh, okay, what's on the other channel? but not only as a cultural phenomenon when it premiered and is still, knock wood, going strong, but for me, as the host of it, finding this wonderful, kitschy hybrid of old style variety and modern reality, and the producers and the network really from the start almost said to me, we trust your sense of humor, your sensibilities, that you can lovingly make fun of the show as you're hosting it. And you know, the line I've always drawn is I'm very protective of the couples, but I'll make fun of everything else, the spray tanning, crazy award. So it's proven to be just an amazing gift of my career, this unlikely hit.
I remember when I first heard about the show, and again, I'm being very honest here, when I just first heard about it, I was at GMA, and, you know, of course, a big deal about the new fall shows and stuff. I remember thinking, what? My main thought was, it wasn't you or anything, it was, well, who's going to go on this show? Not everybody can dance. Right. You're going to run out of stars who can dance. But lo and behold, you've had, you know, Super Bowl champions and all kinds of people on the show. It's amazing.
The conceit is you don't want them to be able to dance that well. I mean, inevitably you get people who do, but it's more that one of the seasons that surprised me because it didn't do as well as we thought was our all-star season. And research showed that people didn't want to see everybody come out of the gate dancing really well.
Right.
They wanted to watch that process, that journey, if you will, that hackneyed phrase, but happen over the course of the season. And don't come out of the gate looking like you just stepped off the Broadway stage.
I think that's the key. I think, because I didn't know who the audience was going to be. It turned out the audience is everybody.
Yeah.
What I like about the show the most is watching people that don't seem like they're going to be dancing well come out. Even if they don't win, they always wind up saying, it's the best time I ever had. I learned so much. And to watch them learn how to, I mean, I can't dance at all. You know, and a lot of people come on the show and say that they can't, and by the end of it, they're pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that part. I also like watching Wayne Newton try to catch his breath.
You can see that anytime in Vegas.
He was in Dr. Payne, I think.
was that a great joke?
Listen, Tom, we're going to let you go. I know you're a busy man. I want to say a couple of things. Number one, you mentioned people should go to YouTube and watch Breakfast Time, look for the old clips. I would also encourage people, and my goodness, I get stuck on this sometimes. I'm on YouTube. I'm looking at old game show clips and the game show bloopers. Man, you got to watch. Because here's the thing about you. People think hosting is easy. It's not. You got to know the room, you got to know the audience, and you got to know where that line is. And what I like about you, and if people watch closely the different projects you're in, you always know where that line is.
He does.
And you know it for the different venues, the different audiences. It's different for Hollywood Squares than it is for America's Funniest Videos, Right. And you know it, and that's great. I respect you for that. I want to tell people, go to YouTube, look up the old clips from Hollywood Squares, because, man, there was some funny stuff. And some of the bloopers, you guys looked like you were just having a ball on that show.
We were. And the classic one, look up Hollywood Squares and then the phrase, "You fool," Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes.
And it was, he was the last square. And it went back and forth and back and forth and for almost the entire show. And every time the contestant would guess wrong, Gilbert would yell, "You fool!"
It's great. I've seen it. It's great. And it goes forever. It goes forever. You're falling off your chair.
Yeah.
It's great. Also, we remind people to watch Dancing with the Stars and your final season of America's Funniest Videos. Your book, I'm Hosting as Fast as I Can, I think is now on Kindle.
Kindle, paperback, and hardback, yeah.
And holding up some of America's finest windows.
Yeah, but listen, we're doing a great job of shilling for you, you have to admit.
I appreciate, well, given what you pay to show up on the show, sure, okay.
We got to do something.
There's going to be a benefit somewhere. I don't know what it is. Tom, one more thing. You and I have been joking for 20 years about the fact that one thing that's kept our relationship fresh is the fact that we never seem to be able to get together. I think I mean we've texted each other 1,000 times about dinners we've never had.
And I know, it's true.
I think that's why we're still very good friends, and I would like to invite you to dinner, and I hope you don't come, but at some point on either coast, I really have to see you.
I think proximity might ruin this, but I'll risk it.
Nice. Very nice.
And if you're ever in town, come by the show. Tom Bergeron, thanks for joining us. We love it.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Thanks so much. You can drive your car now.
Thank you.
There he is, the king of television, right. Tom Bergeron.
He's great.
Love him.
He's great.
Love
and you know, I would not be doing my job if I didn't say, buy Tom Bergeron's book at MikeOmerishaw.com/Amazon. Thank you.
He's absolutely fantastic. Great.
Wonderful.
There you go. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Tom Bergeron.
Absolutely.
Very, very nice.
Our good buddy sitting in a car for hours. Yeah. You know, he says he no longer had the fire in the belly years ago, really, to be the guy that I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be like a new king of late night.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the career goes where it goes, and he doesn't have the fire to do that anymore.
Right. I respect that.
Me too.
I get that.
Very
I completely
much.
Get it. Hey, it's not like he hasn't been successful.
No. Wildly successful. It just went in a different direction.
Mucho dollars.
Yes.
When you're hosting the number one show on TV, mucho dollars.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Listen, as long as we're, you know,
talking about money?
Talking about
no.
All right, that's
do you have a surprise for me?
No, I just wanted to say, you know, what a joy it is to be on the Mike O'Mara Network. We love being here. It is a great family, and we thank those of you who have embraced us and helped us to be a part of that family. It is a great privilege and lots of fun.
And I'm personally, because nobody knew who I was before we did this show, I want to thank Mike Morrow also, because he's been so good to me.
Yes, yeah, he has been. He's been fantastic to you, Tim Stein. Don't forget, tell your friends about the Tony Perkins Show. Check us out. Well, you can do it at any number of ways. Check us out at www.tonyperkinsshow.com. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
Love it. You covered everything, including you probably were thinking that they should give us a 5-star review.
Oh, and Gary, you're so right. This is how close we are, Rob.
Yeah.
He can read my mind. I was thinking, please give us a 5-star review when you subscribe to us on iTunes. It helps us, and it makes you feel better.
I just caught the last thing you were thinking. You were just thinking, Gary is the funniest person I know.
Actually, right now I'm thinking 2 words. Can you guess what they are?
Yes.
Thank you, folks. We'll see you soon.
Take care.
Happy holidays.
The Tony Perkins Show, a Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.